These are the companies that are going to explode in the coming years. Not everyone, some are going to fail. That's where the huge, huge opportunity lies.
We are truly going through a new industrial revolution. We are, and everybody can feel it. If you just study NVIDIA, you study Tesla, you study Meta, you study OpenAI, you study every single company out there.
Private markets are extremely buoyant and extremely vibrant. You know, I have been a long time investor in the private markets and been very successful. The great discoveries of this coming era are not going to be, you know, just another app with AI.
It seems like the opportunities that are going to arise are going to be probably millions in the next 10 years. And to have a good filtering device, yeah, AKA people that know what they're doing, is probably going to be extremely valuable. So we have Bradford and Larry, which if you're in the Tesla community, you probably know these two very handsome gentlemen very, very well. But we're actually on today to talk about the future, to talk about the next 3 years and potentially even further down. But really, I think the interesting thing about the time that we're in right now is that even though we cover the Musk economy very closely, we cover the Tesla space very closely, the entire world is really going through a transformational period. And I think anybody who follows the Musk industry can see that. Adjacent industries, sort of like industries that are being born because of things like artificial intelligence, the future of what the world's going to look like with embodied AI, the things that are going to be enabled because of these technologies. If I'm sitting down and I'm studying all the different, you know, potential, not just investing opportunities, but like the societal shifts. Everything is changing so fast. Everything is changing so fast. And it's all because, partly because of artificial intelligence.
If you think about the Tesla investor, the frustration with the Tesla investor is that Tesla is an N of one on the stock exchanges of the world today. It's the only place, one of the only places that you can go to invest early in a revolutionary movement, in this drive towards, you know, the transformation of humanity. Yeah, you can invest in some of the other, you know, seven counters that are, you know, the Mag 7, but none of them are pure plays and none of them are on the very edge, with the possible exception, I think, of NVIDIA. Here's the reality. The greatest changes and the most impactful changes since Tesla went public in 2013 are not on the public markets.
Yeah.
They're private companies. And that's the reality that the Tesla investor faces. The Tesla investor scratches their head and say, other than Tesla, where am I going to put my money? And so Brad and I, you know, both of us are invested in private companies that are not on the stock exchanges, not available to, you can't as a retail investor just go ahead and invest in those companies. And more importantly, you can't invest in any of the companies that are not, you know, Musk companies, but are, you know, doing for humanity what Musk companies are doing for humanity.
Yeah.
And those are the companies that are going to explode in the coming years. Not every one of them, some are going to fail, but that's where the vigorous, that's where the huge, huge opportunity lies.
For sure.
And that's really where Brad and I are focused.
And I'll also submit that it's true that Elon is hitting some massive areas, like changing the face of transportation as a service, and changing the face potentially of labor, the field of labor, and, you know, working in factories and other things with TeslaBot, with Optimus. Like, those are some huge areas. Energy with Megapack, but there's more opportunities that we're finding.
And there are opportunities amongst those companies that are aligned with Tesla, but there are also opportunities in areas that Tesla may not be pursuing, or that are adjacent to what Tesla is pursuing, or that SpaceX are pursuing, and so on. So really, the opportunity for the Tesla investor lies not as much in the publicly traded markets, but in some of the privately traded markets. And that's where the opportunity lies for the investor today. And that's where we're going to make such an enormous difference to the U.S. economy and the global economy, in addition to Tesla and in addition to SpaceX and in addition to Neuralink and in addition to XAI, there are these other opportunities that lie.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about what you're going through here is like, so I've spoken to many people on this podcast. I actually just had Steve Jurvetson on recently, and that was an awesome conversation. I mean, I was telling him, by the end of it, it was an hour conversation. Thank God my brain was fresh because I was able to keep up. But by the end of it, I'm like, did I just run a marathon? What just happened? And Steve's like, you know, just going about his way. And I'm like, wow, this guy. So the story he was telling, and one of the questions I posed to him was, you know, because he's been in the markets for a long time. I know you guys have been in the markets and have investing and, you know, being part of the financial world for a long time. But one of the questions that I had for him was, does this time, compare this time to other times in the past where builders were coming together to build the future? And he said, there's nothing else like what's happening right now. The amount of push, the amount of the effort, the amount of people that are not only inspired by what's going on, and some of that he attributed to Elon Musk himself with the efforts that he did with Tesla and SpaceX and proving to builders that you can do a lot of crazy shit if you just do it and you believe in it and you set a mission that truly is existential and for the betterment of humanity, you would be surprised by how much you can get done. And that energy has been captured and has been absorbed by many, many people to a point that now we're entering a time for the next 5, 10, 20 years potentially where we are truly going through a new industrial revolution. We are, and everybody can feel it. If you just study NVIDIA, you study Tesla, you study Meta, you study OpenAI, you study every single company out there, there is a reason why everyone's saying the same thing. It's because it's happening.
If you lived through the PC revolution in the early 80s, if you lived through the advent of the internet in the early 90s, and if you lived through the change in media to podcasting to raise up to greatness people like Farzad, then you've seen some of the changes. But the change that's happening now really turns those into right minor events compared to what's happening now. And by the way, Steve is right, but I will tell you that I've studied very carefully the late 90s, the late 19th century, and I will tell you that the second industrial revolution, railways, motor cars,
the electricity, the telephone,
those were, you know, similar kinds of days. And you look back at those days, that until that time, until the first industrial revolution, and particularly the second industrial revolution, mankind grew at less than 1% per annum. In fact, in many years, the global economy declined. And then all of a sudden, the world changed, first with the first industrial revolution, but mainly with the second industrial revolution. And suddenly, we're growing at 5, 6, 7% faster than the population is growing. So this is a very important moment because we're about to see growth go through the roof. Economies are going to start growing, and not just the U.S. economy, but principally the U.S. economy and the Chinese economy in particular are going to start growing at dramatic rates, and the opportunities for investment are going to be off the clock. But most of them are not going to be public.
Okay, so can I ask you why? So why can't these companies be public? Is it a regulatory thing? Is there too many hurdles to go through to become a public company? Is there too much risk involved?
I feel like we're early. So, you know, you mentioned the hyperscalers with AI, but with other opportunities we're seeing, it's just very early. So you think about, you know, Apple, they created the iPad, but before they did the iPad and the iPhone, touchscreens had to be, you know, lower cost and really good. You had this convergence of things that ended up happening. And so, you know, what we're looking for is akin to like the supplier for a touchscreen, that idea where it's early in the phase of the company, you know, before the company becomes really huge. So the reason is just the timing of the life of the company. So like one of the opportunities we're looking at is in medical devices, and the founder's like this hacker, and he he really hit Google Glass hard when Google Glass came out. You know, Google Glass was a failure, but there's some good things that came out of it, some interesting insights. And we'll share those with, you know, people who want to hear that. But I believe it's a convergence that's happening. And it's not just AI related. It's just, you know, taking this push in technology and things are just coming together. I think that's what's changing.
Absolutely. And there is a second factor, which is kind of orthogonal to the whole innovation cycle. And that is public companies kind of went out of vogue for a whole lot of financial reasons rather than, you know, innovation reasons. And so companies are, and because, you know, companies have been able to remain private for so much longer, it's almost become a marketplace in private, there's almost become a marketplace for private companies because the bureaucracy and the controls and litigation around public companies have become so restrictive. So there's kind of this convergence of this notion of being able to operate outside of that bureaucratic control. Some of that bureaucratic control has been peppered by or transfigured by political considerations.
Yeah.
And so these companies have, many companies have preferred to remain private. And that's why, I mean, Elon is very unlikely to take any of his companies public again.
His interview with ARK, the last one he had, you know, they were talking about public versus private, and he, because of like reporting requirements and just like the short-term thinking that comes around companies reporting on a quarterly basis and just having many more shareholders, but also the added stuff in the public, just more information in the public and all the criticism and sniping that can happen from that.
And the litigation, the cost of litigation, the time and money cost of litigation. Anyway, so private markets are extremely buoyant and extremely vibrant, I think is the word. And, you know, I have been a long-time investor in DM me and I'll put you in touch with them. What we're looking at is not the Elon Musk companies. What we're looking at as a company, as Lumacenti, and we'll talk about Lumacenti, but we're looking at helping investors invest in private companies that we have carefully selected that we want to invest in ourselves.
Let me actually propose this question, because I know this is something like when I think of private markets, I think of a lot of benefits, but I also know that most companies, all of the companies, almost every company fails when they're in the private market phase. Right. And so there's going to be a lot of filtering processes that have to be taken. So that's what I really want to learn the process that you guys are taking there too. Because if people are going to choose to go with Lumacenti, right, I think it's going to be very important for the audience to understand, like, how do we know that this isn't going to be a thing where, yes, AI and all this stuff is going to go for the next 3 years. It's going to be crazy. I'm going to choose to partner with Lumacenti. And then it's like, okay, wow. Now there's like, they picked eight, seven of them are duds. And the eighth is like, eh. It kind of nothing happened there, right? So like, and now with a lot of like, oh, there's an AI bubble happening. Look at all this glut that's happening. Help me understand that process that you guys are going through to really filter the right companies.
Number one, we are not going to be a venture capital fund where you invest in the fund and you have to go with whatever we do across the board and then you hope one hits. That's our model is we offer one investment at a time, and you as an investor can decide to invest in it or not. You make your own decision which companies you invest in. You don't accept the portfolio, so that your investment, each investment that you make through Lumacenti, is directly tied and directly related to that single company, and you can choose to invest in none of them. You can invest in one of them, you can invest in two of them, but every quarter or so, we will identify a company, and maybe it's only one, in 1 year, it's only one company, in 1 year, it may be four companies, but we will select a company that we want to invest in, that we've identified, that we've done the due diligence, and we want to put our money into that. And that is the company that, you know, Lumacenti will put on offer, And we will invite you to learn about it and invite you to decide, do we invest in this or do we not invest in that? So that would be our response. But to the broader question of do we invest in private companies versus public companies, because private companies often go out of business. Yes, they do. But the other side of that coin is that the chances of earning a much higher return than you would earn from a public company is ever present in carefully nurtured, carefully selected private companies. And so, you know, I have had private company investments where I've got between 16 and 100 times my investment. I've been in private companies where it's gone to zero. But on balance, my investment in private companies have been far more, I mean, an order of magnitude more successful than my investments in public companies, with the possible exception of Tesla.
So what are those variables that you look for then? Because I remember you and I were talking about this offline a few months ago. It's like, because when I was picking your brain, I'm like, you know, because you were talking about, like, you've been in the private markets for how long, Larry? Like 5 years or something, right?
16 years.
16 years, right? So it's
yeah, and if you include my own companies, then it's closer to 60 years.
Yeah. So you've been around the game. You know exactly what goes into it. Obviously, Bradford's been around the finance game for a while as well. And it's one of these things where, you know, if somebody like me that's looking to enter the private markets at some point, let's say in the next few years or whatever, what are the key variables you look for when you're trying to identify these private companies? You know, it's like if I take Tesla as an example, you know, why did I invest in Tesla? It's because it seemed like it had an extraordinary leader with an extraordinary mission statement that was existential. It had the right culture. It seemed like it had the right culture to really inspire the people that work for him, and is also a magnet for like-minded people to join the company as well. And the product was great. Okay. How do you do that in the private market when a lot of these companies don't even have a product yet? That's the piece I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, we're looking for companies that have a unique offering. So our first couple are in medical device, and the area they're going after, there's no great standard of treatment for, you know, what they're pursuing. So typically, we're looking at something that where the product is developed. But then, you know, maybe they might need to do an FDA trial. So they'll need to do a trial and they'll have to set it up so it can be scientific and they can prove that their device is an improvement on the standard of care. So we're looking for that uniqueness. Just more generally with companies, a unique type of product is going to have the effect of lowering the cost in an industry for whatever they're delivering. But often you'll also get an impact where the value to the customer is greatly enhanced. So we're looking at, you know, there's some testing companies out there where you can lower the cost of a test and greatly reduce the time that the patient needs to do to take the test. Just one example, where the test isn't a very good way of doing it today. And when you're talking about lowering costs, like Tesla makes, they're one of the only EV makers that makes EVs profitably in the world. So like even the Chinese automakers, a lot of them, they're only making hybrids at a profit.
Yeah.
They're not making pure EVs at a profit. So they have a huge cost advantage because of their scale. But also they deliver a much higher value on the product, you know, with their autonomy, which is unmatched. Like you can't take a Waymo to any city in the US and it work. There's a process for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's that uniqueness that we're looking for.
Let me talk about investing in private companies. The single biggest risk in private companies is in investing in startup, not private, startup companies, is maturity of market and product market fit and product advantage. I mean, those three things are very important. I'm going to talk about other very important things, but Those three things are very important. So Brad and I are not going to invest in something where the product market fit does not exist or the product does not exist. That would be far too early in the cycle to have, you know, an investment of any consequence where you would take third-party money. That's the kind of risk that friends and family have to make, that the entrepreneur has to make. But once we have a product that is proven and has proven to have a product market fit, which means to say that there's a large number of people who would want to buy it at that price, that would be profitable, and that it is unique in terms of its offering to the public, such that it would replace, you know, alternatives that are inferior. That's a lot of words to describe product market fit, but that's the single most important aspect of the company as a whole. Equivalent to it, and at the second, if you like, pillar of risk factor is the founder. The character, the personality, the grit, the ability to sustain long periods of difficulty and to show good judgment through that period, those four traits are something that we test for with every founder. So if you have product market fit and you have a founder who's got the grit to build in the face of really difficult circumstances, that is to say, a product that you don't know whether it'll fit, a market that you don't know exists, you know, and create a product nonetheless and show and demonstrate that product market fit and do it with grace, not by, you know, cheating or not by obfuscating and not by, you know, any other, you know, means that are not upfront, clear, and well explained and well proven. Those two pillars are the two most important pillars of any selection of a private company. Doesn't guarantee success. It makes a huge difference in terms of probability of success. And then against that, the other, you know, very important, and I kept talking about pillars, maybe we should even talk about, you know, the legs of a stool. Maybe the third leg of the stool is to make sure that the funding that can be provided, that is being provided, that is being provisioned in the totality of the process is sufficient to take it from product market fit to a mature product and in the market, and in the medical devices, which happen to be, you know, one of the principal choices that we have. And it's really attuned to the mission of Lumisenti, which I'll talk about in a minute, but very highly attuned to the mission of Lumisenti. The third pillar is finance, to make sure that this excellent builder, this personality that's capable of building under extremely tough circumstances, and that this product that has been shown to have good fit has got sufficient money with the arrangements we're making and who's coming to the table, those three things are the greatest opportunity for success. I'm not saying it guarantees success, not at all. What I'm saying it is really what makes the difference between what succeeds in the marketplace and what doesn't. Look, I've thrown money after things I think, this guy's got something. Mm-hmm. Let's give him a little bit of money and see if he can get to the product market fit, and let's see if he's a founder, if he's a builder.
Let's see if these things happen,
and then we can look at the third stool. And I've lost money on 70% of those bets.
Yeah.
I would never put that into Lumisenti. I would put into Lumisenti that which fulfills the mission statement of Lumisenti, and that mission statement is aligned with Elon's belief in, you know, perpetuating the human spirit, perpetuating, you know, the humanity, and you know, making sure that we survive into the future and that we prosper into the future and that we don't see the decline, demise, and disappearance of humanity. And so you got to have those three legs of the stool, and then you have to make sure that the mission is aligned with what Lumisenti believes in.
I've seen what Larry's talking about with some lithium companies There have been some companies in the lithium space that might have a great claim, or maybe they have a really good technology on recycling or things like that. But the funding round wasn't decisive. We were talking about it's got to be decisive. It's got to get them over that hump.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you make a great point there, Larry, with that third.
Job is not to tread on their space. Our job is to find companies that are outside of Elon's ventures, but have got all the product market fit, the builder, and then, you know, we're going to ensure that we are part of a round that is not, you know, the startup, but is in a point where we feel that the company's future is, I wouldn't say assured, but the opportunity is greatly, you know, has got this very positive set of elements to it.
Yeah.
And the upside is very, very, very high indeed. These two first companies we've identified, and it's the first one that we're offering now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have our Lumisenti page up. We'll show it to you. It's online, lumisenti.com. You can go there, put your name in. We'll send you the materials. You get to decide. You get to see what we've done, see the product, see the company, meet the founders, meet the builders, meet the other members of the board, meet some of the major companies that are coming into the investment at this maturing stage, and make your own decision.
Can you talk about some of the requirements that you're looking for if somebody's interested in you know, checking out Lumisenti? We'll have a link for that in the description in the comment section below. So what kind of investors are you looking for?
Typically, it's accredited investors, so you have to either have $1 million in liquid net worth, so that doesn't include real estate or private companies, so it'd be, you know, public equities and cash, those types of things. Mutual funds would also be liquid. Then another way you can qualify as an accredited investor is through repeated high income, so if your income's over a certain threshold, for a couple of years in a row, you can qualify that way. Another way to qualify is called a qualified purchaser, where you have $5 million or more in liquid net worth.
Got it.
And a lot of companies, they limit their investors to only qualified purchasers, and we're not going to do that. This is not a part of my sponsorship agreement with Farzad. Like,
it's not. I'm not being paid at all.
I couldn't pay Farzad to do this video. So I want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah. So,
you know, the key is that Lumisenti, you know, our slogan, our war cry, our raison d'etre is capital in service of the light of human consciousness. So we really see this as, you know, a debt being paid to society and focused on trying to build a society that we all can be proud of and we all can enjoy. And I think you'll see that in our first couple of investments, how focused we are on human consciousness and how focused we are on doing good and building, you know, meaningful opportunities, meaningful companies, meaningful enterprises for the country, for the nation, for the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the focus. I don't think Brad and I need any more wealth in this world, but I think that what we can do is do good with our money, and hopefully, you know, you'll join us in that journey.
And it's not a charity, so, you know, we aren't just doing this to fund something because, you know, we think it's critical that some question gets answered and, you know, maybe it works out or not. It's critical that the businesses that we invest in are profitable and become very profitable, because then that would mean it's self-sustaining, you know, from there, and would, you know, grow exponentially from there.
Our will is to fund companies that have inordinate returns commensurate with, you know, innovation and building that which, you know, like Elon builds, that is irreplaceable for humanity.
So I know recently there were some companies raising money for space stations. People are talking about space stations now. I think there's a public company that's doing some of that and some private companies. But Starship, if Starship is successful, it's going to greatly reduce the cost for people to get mass to orbit. So to build a to build a space station or just to send one up whole to space, that cost is going to drop if Starship is successful. So we're not just that's true. So we're not just looking at any when we do look to space. We're a company. We're not just going to look at any company that's operating in space or that's putting up mass to space or something like that. They have to have an economic advantage that's durable. And when you have Starship, and we could get to a point where Starship is launching daily or more than daily from Boca Chica. I'm curious if, they'll be allowed to do that at Cape Canaveral. I guess they will.
There'll be a lot
of mass going up into space at that
point. Building at Cape Canaveral for that very purpose.
Yeah. So it opens up this brand new just market that has never existed before that's going to allow for God knows what kind of companies, industries, opportunities that are going to arrive. Just in the same way, when vehicles, self-driving cars get to sub 30 cents per mile, like what's going to happen there? Everyone's want to go to a freaking football game because now you don't have to find parking. You can just go there for like $3 and you go, or like these public events or concerts or festivals or, doing things outside. It's going to become much easier, much cheaper to get to, especially things that are farther away that you don't want to deal driving with. Space is a whole different thing, right? Space is a whole different thing. What other things are out there that you guys are scoping out that you can talk about?
There are, if you look at, I don't know if you follow ARK Invest at all, but if you do, they talk about this panoply of new technologies that are changing the world. And so if you think about AI and you think about robotics and you think about the breakthroughs in healthcare, these areas are going to change how we live. Brad's just talked about, getting to space as a relatively inexpensive process. You've talked about driving or autonomous driving, changing driving and travel as an inexpensive process. So with that, there are going to be so many changes of consequence. So the successful startups of today are those that recognize the opportunity to use these new technologies that are arising, not necessarily one at a time, but possibly in tandem and connected to each other. Look, the great discoveries of this coming era are not going to be, just another app with AI. This app or the other app that's been successful, but we're adding AI. Yeah. I get about, 10 or so applications a day for people who are building an app that has got AI in it. And, for anybody writing to me, please don't, if that's what you're doing. And, I respond to every inquiry. I respond to every inquiry and I just tell them, whether or not I want to pursue that. And I don't pursue but 1 in 100, if I pursue even 1 in 100, because so many offerings are not people who are building something of consequence. But if you take AI and you really think about how it's going to change the world, and if you're an expert in a particular area and you can see that change in the world, meshes with what you've got in mind, and if you can take that to the proof point where you can show demand for that, you can show natural demand for it, and you can show how it can be built and delivered into the marketplace, that's something that is of great interest. So you take these, these changes that we're talking about are as consequential as the changes we were talking about the second industrial revolution. This is the digital revolution. This is the, AI revolution. This is the, manufacturing revolution. I mean, the manufacturing evolution of the last 10 or 20 years is how Apple taught Chinese people how to build dexterously build these micro-miniature electronic equipment, and they're now magnificent at it. We have to go one step further. We have to build beyond that capability. We have to take a giant leap, and it's unclear how we make that leap and where what the focus is. And we see emerging, in Tesla manufacturing and in the robotic manufacturing, we see emerging that opportunity. And in terms of making chips, so hugely important era we're in, hugely important steps to make, and the opportunity to make, significant financial gain is there.
It seems like the opportunities that are going to arise are going to be probably millions in the next 10 years. And to have a good filtering device, yeah, AKA people that know what they're doing, is probably going to be extremely valuable. And this is why I think, I personally think, knowing you guys, it seems like you guys are very successful at what you already do. And obviously you have a track record for what you do. Obviously this doesn't guarantee success for the new things y'all are going to do. But I think this is why I enjoy talking to both of you, because I learned a lot from both of you. And Larry and I have been chatting for quite a minute now. He's like a brother of mine now. We basically look the same, right? And it's just, I don't know, it's just really fun talking about this stuff. But now it really does feel like a very special age. And I think people will at the very least find very interesting what you guys are doing with Lumacenti, at the very, very least. So is there anything else you guys wanted to add?
It is risky to do private equity. It is risky to do venture capital. You can lose 100% on a deal, like Larry said. You do need to manage the percentage of that you have in private deals, or the percentage you put in. So you need to be willing to lose that money, of course. So that risk is ever present. But I think what the opportunity is, and this is one of my biggest lessons from investing in Tesla, was that, and I try to learn not only from my failures, but also my successes. And one thing I learned from Tesla is that Tesla isn't the only company that Wall Street or venture capital or private equity is underestimating. So there's this blind spot for growth areas typically. Now there's some that are, playing AI like crazy or whatever. But there's this general reluctance where, if a company is growing and they're growing exponentially, so like the chart looks like this, what Wall Street ends up doing is they say, okay, well, it's going to grow fast that first year, but then like the next couple of years, the growth is going to get cut in half. So they make it a log chart instead of an exponential chart. So I think this blind spot can create some opportunities. And that's why we bother to watch. Because it's kind of a crazy idea that Larry and I are doing this now on like the eve of V14, eve of Robotaxi, and the eve of Optimus. Like, that's a little nutty, but we do think there are other opportunities. And we don't have like this big bone or whatever to get people to sell their Tesla or anything like that either. Like, that's not a thing.
Right.
So it's just about looking at some other opportunities. And this is just fun for me. I love meeting the founders and seeing how they think and seeing how they structured their business to deal with the potential obstacles that they face.
All right. So if people are interested in checking out Lumacenti, make sure you go to lumacenti.com. We'll have a link for that in the description, the comment section below. Bradford and Larry, thank you guys very much for joining me. I think there's going to be a lot of interested people. I think a lot of people are going to find, what are these guys up to? Why as far as I have these guys on? I mean, people know you guys already very well for what you've done. But I do encourage you guys to check them out for sure. See what they have going on. See if it's something that aligns with what you're looking for. And I want to thank you guys again for coming on and really appreciate your time.